You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Sleep in Society. I'm Ruhi Snyder. Today, joining me on Sleep in Society and guest hosting this episode is my dear friend, Kim Breland. We are going to go further into the diet component of my longitudinal self-care study, the role of self-regulation and shift schedules to counter the slow violence of shift work. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you, Ruhi. I'm so glad to be back for another delicious conversation with you.
Well, I'm excited.
So you just reminded folks about the fascinating study that you did, which went on for many, many years, and it was a pretty complicated and nuanced set of factors that you were living and learning about as it went on. Tell us a little bit about where your thinking and your research started. Perhaps exercise is the place where it all began. Is that accurate?
That is true. And I think we have dived into the exercise component in the previous podcasts. But the study itself definitely started with exercise because that was the only way I could deal with the negativity that I was beginning to experience in terms of shift work. And that was one way that I knew that you could cope with negativity. And so exercise was my first thing that I went to. And that started in 2011. And as I've discussed previously, that took quite a while to build up to high-intensity interval training that became part of the bigger thesis.
Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, you weren't really thinking that much about diet, partly because you were already eating a very healthy diet full of delicious home-cooked meals and good quality nutrients, and you had a pretty good understanding about nutrition, especially from a sports perspective. But your thinking about exercise and nutrition in the context of shift work changed quite a bit over the years. Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's such an interesting and complex question. Because well, it is because you and I have gone back on this quite a bit, trying to figure out, trying to nail it down. And we realize how complex it is because there are so many variables and so much like scientific information coming from so many different fields, right?
So indeed. And that's part of what's fascinating about your study, just saying.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Because when I first started exercising and you're investing that much in terms of training, putting your physical self into it, the second thing that always, like for me, that came into like kind of came into my consciousness was the diet component. And as we discussed, that I already knew in terms of nutrition that we ate well in our household, we ate lots of good food, lots of nutritious food, home-cooked meals. Processed food and junk food is not part of our household, especially as I became a mother. I was very cognizant of what I was putting in my body and what I was putting in my child's body. So I thought that I didn't even think about it, actually, Kim. Like, I thought, oh, I am exercising, so, like, as long as I'm eating healthy, everything's good, right? So I was not paying attention to what exactly I was eating up until when I really started training, like high intensity interval training, and that's going into the second year of my high intensity interval training, where I started going, what is it that I should be, how I can actually make this an even more of an efficient process. And that's when I started looking into sports nutrition. As I was learning more and more about what types of exercising I should be doing, as I started paying attention to when I should be exercising, especially at night, I also started looking at paying attention to when, like in terms of like when I'm exercising, what I should be eating when.
Yes, because the timing of both the eating and the exercise are not only interconnected, but they also have an impact on how you survive the shift work in your day-to-day life. What did you learn about that as you went along?
First, I wanted to see what kind of diet would benefit me the most in terms of nutritional component and how it would benefit the exercise that I was doing. Because, from coming from angle of sleep, like knowing about sleep, I was quite well aware of the metabolic hormones and their relationship to sleep. And like leptin, ghrelin, insulin. And just as a reminder, I know I've discussed this in a previous podcast. Leptin is a hormone that tells your body you've had enough, stop eating. Ghrelin tells your body you're hungry, please eat. And insulin is, where we store our energy, and the pancreas releases insulin as soon as we eat, and then that it is in terms of energy storage. So I kind of knew about those components of it, but I did not know their relationship in terms of sleep and shift work. And as I started going more into the diet aspect of it, so by, let's say, 2011, my diet was all over the place. I was eating whenever, anytime between when I would wake up to like 4 a.m. I would have coffee, tea, till like I was having last cup of coffee or tea like 4 a.m. I would be snacking throughout the night. So there was no particular timing. As long as I exercised, and as the exercise component of it was also all over the place, I didn't come to that particular control of exercise timing until 2012, when I started paying attention to when I should be exercising. And that's when I also started thinking, if I'm controlling the timing of exercise, maybe I should be really looking into controlling the timing of diet too. And by that, what I mean, like I shouldn't be eating throughout the night, for example, that it should be controlled, that I should eat just prior to my high intensity training and to make sure that I preserve muscle mass, that I should eat shortly after my exercise training. And the reason I say preserve muscle mass is because you are utilizing a lot of energy when you are exercising. And if you don't eat and make up for all of the energy that you've utilized, it'll have an impact in terms of your density, muscle mass density. But what was interesting about this is that I kind of already knew that in terms of shift work, that muscle mass, you lost more muscle mass as a shift worker than you would do, let's say, as a day worker. And we know from so many studies that as we age, we also have a tendency to lose muscle mass, and that shift workers have a tendency to age faster than normal people. So muscle mass was something I really wanted to be protected about. But this kind of information, it didn't get fully consolidated until way later on. I was just looking at the sports aspect of it in terms of sports nutrition, you know, the dictates from coming from sports nutrition as to when you should be eating prior to your high intensity training and when you should be eating post high intensity training, not just in terms of muscle mass preservation, but also post high intensity training, your metabolic system is really on. So you're able to utilize all of that energy and it's not stored in fat cells. Because, you know, shift work, there's a strong correlation between shift work, diabetes, and obesity.
Yes, and I believe that some of your studies about those illnesses led you to try different things and learn different things in the course of the study. And it seems that there are really serious implications for shift workers here, because one might imagine that an 8-hour period of work during the day, when you would be exercising and eating and maybe having a snack or a coffee break or whatever, that if you take the same 8-hour work period and put it overnight instead of during the day, it's not literally a mirror image. You can't do the same things in the same way and not have it have an impact on your health simply because the timing of the shift work changes everything. That's really profound.
Yeah, indeed, because, you know, the hormones are very dependent on the circadian rhythm. And if the same hormones are working for you during the daytime, which is like leptin, ghrelin, insulin, they have the tendency to kind of go AWOL at night. So leptin levels go down, and there are many studies that actually show this. There are studies by Eva von Carter. There are studies by Spiegel, Kenneth Wright, that show that impact of shift work and especially sleep deprivation has significant impact on these specific hormones. So leptin goes down, so your body is not satiated enough. Ghrelin goes up, so you're really, really hungry. And insulin is like completely AWOL because insulin has definitely responds to the circadian rhythm. So in some cases, there are plenty of tests that are showing that. So as a shift worker, you are actually going into the night with already compromised metabolic system. So whatever you're going to eat is going to have a significant impact on your metabolic health.
So that's fascinating. So people who are accustomed to paying close attention to their body and to eating when they're hungry and stopping when they're full can't even trust those cues at night because of the effects that shift work has on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also, during the course of your study, realized that it would be a good idea to cut out certain foods. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so the moment I realized that, or I made the connection, because, you know, sometimes you hold certain knowledge, but you don't start connecting the dots until later on.
Indeed.
And so when the moment I started connecting the insulin, the ghrelin, leptin components to being a shift worker, that's when I also started paying attention to the fact that I should actually completely eliminate sugar. Because sugar is something that you should not be consuming as a shift worker at night because it will not serve you well. So I cut down on sugar, and I also removed starch, like especially white starch, white rice, any kind of, you know, potatoes and that sort of stuff. White, anything white, I removed from my diet completely, just because I wanted to be able to have more of a control over my variables. So anything I knew is not going to serve me well, I started kind of eliminating those variables. So I can see if, you know, that has an impact in terms of giving me the energy that I needed to stay awake all night, to be able to, all this energy that I was actually putting into training really, really hard, that also ended up serving me well. Because you can train really, really hard, but then if you're going to go home and, or post, have pizza and and Coke or something like that's not going to serve you well, right?
Mm-hmm.
It, everything has to kind of work together. So if you're exercising at that level, then I think diet, what you're eating, it's really, really important to start paying attention to that. And I really started paying attention to what I was eating. Not that I'm saying rice and potatoes is not a good thing. I think it's a really good thing, but it also depends when you're eating and how much of it you're consuming on a regular basis.
Yes, and all those good old overprocessed white foods, white flour and white sugar and mm-hmm. white bread, those should be eaten in moderation by anybody at any time.
Indeed.
But as you discovered, they can have a more detrimental effect at certain times of day than others. And I assume that cutting out sugar also includes cutting out alcohol. Is that true?
I'm not a big fan of drinking. It's not like, you know, big part of my life. It was always like there was a social component to it that mm-hmm. I've never had wine that I open up and just start, you know, drink. That's never been part of my lifestyle, so to speak. So alcohol was already something that I did socially, but I completely cut that out because that was something else that I had control over and I could just completely eliminate because I wanted to see truly what you could do if you ate really, really well and really controlled diet, everything that was supposed to be super good for you in terms of, you know, if you're exercising, eating lean meat, eating lots of vegetables and grains and replacing the white rice with brown rice when you needed to and completely eliminating pasta. So I wanted to see if I did all of that, how beneficial all of those things were, because it's kind of you going down a path that is unknown. You're kind of making your own path. And so I didn't know what the results were going to be, but knowing from the scientific data and all of the literature that was around, those are the good things, right? Eating well, mm-hmm. exercising well would actually be are known for the health and well-being component. So if I eliminated all of the things that could possibly be detrimental in terms of this particular experiment, I removed it. And even right. in terms of coffee, like I was very specific to when I stopped drinking it because prior to my timing, I was having caffeine, you know, throughout the night because as shift workers, you kind of need that boost to keep you alert and keep you going. And I started replacing all of those things, but with, you know, exercising at the right time because I knew 2 o'clock was my time to be exercising because I was hitting a wall around 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning. So I thought if I exercised 2 hours prior to that, that would keep me going until I got home. And mm-hmm. even in 2011 and 2012, Kim, I would come home and when I was making breakfast for the kids, I would be making breakfast for me and eating that and going to bed, which is actually it's not something that we recommend even in terms of sleep hygiene, that you shouldn't eat too close to bedtime. So, but if you're starving 6:30, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning when you're coming home, then, you know, and you're tired, then you're likely, more likely to be able to wanting to eat and then go to sleep rather than just
yes,
saying,
of course.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if the hormones, as you've already said, are out of whack so that you can't even trust how hungry you really are. And it's so interesting that you were, in essence, doing everything right. You were exercising every day. You were trying to normalize your sleep patterns within the context of the shift work. The quality of the nutrients you were taking in was excellent. And yet, that wasn't quite the full story. You had to go through a very long process of experimentation and learning to find out how to optimize those factors within the context of the shift work. And I'm also curious about the whole other aspect of eating that we haven't touched on yet, mm-hmm. because there's a whole emotional aspect to eating.
Yes.
There's an aspect of comfort. There's even human rights and civil liberties issues with what nutrients people eat and when they eat them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also changed in very complicated ways by the reality of the shift work. Can you tell us a little bit about how that process was for you?
Well, I think I associate food was something extremely comforting at night shift. Like I, even though you and I've talked about how I ate healthy, right? I'm not taking chips, I'm not taking fries, I'm not taking donuts to work.
Mm-hmm.
That's not part of my food. That's not part of, like, you know, my diet component. I would cut up vegetables and have hummus and have nice cheese and fruit and then a meal. And it's such a joyous thing to be able to do when you're going into working at night and you're going to be, you know, dealing with complex patients and all of that. There is a wonderfully delightful thing when you have good food waiting for you and that you can mm-hmm. share with your colleagues and that you make it into an experience. Like, they're definitely a strong association. Like, even thinking about when I was pregnant with my child and I was working shift work, how important that component was to me, how comfortable it was that I had this whole array of wonderful food that I could consume at night. And there is so much data on showing that people sometimes eat at night just to stay awake, because that's mm-hmm. just something like they do, because either out of boredom or either out of the fact that they are exhausted, and that's something you eat. And people even eat when they're not even hungry. But mm-hmm. I was controlled in that aspect, that I wasn't just eating when I was hungry, but food played such an incredibly important role in my life, period, and especially during shift work, where you would take an array of food and you would be able to share it with your colleagues, and you can talk about food and all of that. So then,
yes,
when
there's a social aspect as well.
Indeed, like, you know, how it's such a shared experience. It's such a shared human experience, right? When, whether it's dinner parties or whether somebody needs comfort, that's the first thing we try to do. We try to feed them.
Oh, I just have to tell you that every time we talk about this, I end up feeling hungry, because the food you talk about always sounds so delicious.
I know. I'm getting hungry just thinking about it just now. But I was just like, I think that is really important part of it. And then when you start controlling what you're eating and when you're eating, that kind of joy actually strips away from it, even though you are eating healthy and you know that you're doing it for a bigger purpose. But when you're like, I can only, that level of self-regulation actually, I think, strips away from the joy of it.
Yes, it could, I'm sure, start to feel like deprivation at times. And I think that it has something to do with delayed gratification, which is a grown-up life skill that all of us had to invest a great deal of time in learning to master. It must have had a lot to do with this process as it was unfolding for you.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think about it. Like, I thought, you know, even we have cupboards that are assigned to us, and usually I would always bring a lot of different kinds of nuts and things like that and put them in there so it would be shared by everybody, you know, whoever wanted to have a bit of it. But I realized that as I moved along in this process, my cupboard became more and more bare, because I didn't want to be enticed. So I had to control all of those things, because part of shift work is that, you know, you lose that kind of regulation because you are so tired and your body is craving sugar, your body is craving carbs. Like, it really is like this is what you want at night. And then if it's kind of available to you, readily available to you, and you don't have that kind of self-regulatory process, it's very easy to fall into the trap of, you know, I'll just have a little bit of this today. I'll just have a piece of chocolate. It's not a big deal. So in order for me to be able to have complete control over those things, I just removed them from my cubbies completely, completely gone. And I just kept these things that were lots of nuts. I still like ate nuts in the beginning of the night with my coffee, which, you know, I had timed like when I would stop having my coffee. But I also realized, like, you know, I was hungrier at night than I was at during the daytime. When I first would wake up from my post-night shift, I didn't want to really eat. But I got hungrier as the night, you know, started and we started working. That's when I really wanted to eat, because that's when my metabolic system kind of, you know, livened up. But that was not, you know, the time that I should be eating. So,
yes, and people sometimes talk about the idea that you don't get mastery over your cravings in the kitchen, you get mastery over your cravings in the store. So if you don't bring the stuff into your house or you don't bring the stuff into work, then those inevitable moments when a craving strikes, it's a lot easier to not give into it if the stuff isn't there begging to be eaten. So that indeed was a pretty good strategy.
Yeah, yeah. Just controlling as many variables as I possibly could. But, you know, that much of control also starts to have an impact on your overall humanity too at some point, right? Because it becomes very, I became very strict with what I ate and when I ate, like to the point that I would end up having half of my meal with my family because I wanted that part intact, like at 6 o'clock before I would leave, and then have the other half post-workout during my night shift work. So that part was also incredibly interesting. I think, like, overall, if you're snacking throughout the day, it's kind of recommended. If you're eating healthy, you snack throughout the day, that's a good way to be, like instead of having three strict meals. But in terms of night, that's not something you should be doing at all, which is, you know, part of our conversation that we're going to be discussing later on as to how I came to those conclusions as part of this diet, sleep, and shift work case study.
And that's going to be very interesting. I'm looking forward to talking about that later. So that's extremely interesting because that type of regimentation, as you said, made your life a little less spontaneous. It may have sometimes made it feel a little less joyful, even though all the things that you were doing were in the service of good feelings and good health. And all the different things that we've been talking about have been about the long process that you did over the course of your study, and that some of the learnings really unfolded in an organic way, and some of them came about through other research that you were doing in the process of researching the whole question of shift work and sleep. And I wonder, just thinking about all the things that we've touched on so far today, is there one thing that you can say that would crystallize this topic that we've covered so far and what you learned during the process of exploring these different aspects of exercise and nutrition and shift work and sleep and timing? How would you sum that all up?
I think it's really important to understand your variables. It's really important to be self-aware of your situation. There are going to be things that you can control, and there are going to be things that are out of your control. But even knowing things that you're going to be able to control doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be really rigid about it. Because what ends up happening is when you are becoming that self-regulated, that level of self-regulation where you are fixed on when you should be eating, what you should be eating, and all of those things, that what it ends up doing, or what it, in my case, what it ended up doing was making me very inflexible about things. And then I could not actually, in some cases, wasn't able to truly participate in little joys of life. For example, in terms of eating sugar, I only ate desserts on somebody's birthday. And even then, it was a small part of it because I was that controlled in terms of when I should be eating. But it's really, really important to understand that our biology works really differently at night than it would be during daytime. And understanding that, we organize our lives accordingly, but not so rigidly that you take the humanity right out of it. Because in the end, what is it really about? I think I had a great job. I loved being with my patients. I love sleep medicine. I had a fortune of being with fantastic colleagues. But in the end, it's really, really important that you give yourself the flexibility to be able to enjoy those really, really important components of your life. But don't go around like eating too much sugar at night, because we know sugar is not really good for you, period. And be mindful of like when you're eating and what you're eating. Just be mindful of that. And I think that's what I have to say about this on this particular this particular question.
Well, that's a lovely sentiment, and I really like the idea that although many people, whether they are shift workers or not, if they're beginning a new diet regime or a new exercise regime, often tend to be really rigid with themselves, and that can be a great way to learn a lot. It can be a great way to start a habit. But I really love what you said about the fact that small moments of joy and being gentle with oneself are a pretty important component to just being able to enjoy life enough that you will continue to be able to do the exercise or the diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can have that process of self-regulation without becoming extremely rigid about it. Because in the end, it's all about flexibility, right?
Exactly. That's a very important distinction.
Mm-hmm. You're creating the self-regulation process to be flexible at the negative impact of shift work that's coming at you. We're exercising so we can be healthy and we can be better able to cope with challenges that are coming our way. We have good diets, so we're able to cope with, because we want to live well and eventually want to have a good death, right? So, but it's also really important that to make sure that you're also enjoying the process itself, like be mindful of that. I think that's really, really important.
Exactly. I think that's a wonderful thought to end on.
Thank you, Kim, for being here.
Yes, thank you so much. That was absolutely fascinating. And it's been clear through the conversation that there's lots of really other interesting aspects to these discussions that we will be covering in later episodes. So hope to see you folks then.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Sleep in Society. And we will connect soon.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @ruhisleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.